Are you ready for the big game? At The Designery, we can help you arrange your kitchen in the perfect way to feed everyone coming over for the big game. I'm Dana Merrill, the owner of The Designery in North Raleigh.
And I am True Merrill.
The Designery grand opening, we're scheduled to open May 16th and do our grand opening party then. We're going to be catering some food. We're doing some giveaways. We have a VR headset, an Echo Show, some kitchen gadgets, and some fancy knives. 12 to 2 p.m.
Please stop by our showroom, 3030 Wake Forest Road. That's The Designery at thedesignery.com.
Everybody wants to talk about the coaches, including us, right? Coaches get reputations of being great postseason coaches. All they have to do is make it to the tourney, and they'll have their team more prepared. Well, yes, in-game, you can call a great timeout. You can make a great substitution. You can get out the little clipboard, whiteboard with the basketball court drawn on it already and draw up a great baseline inbounds play. Get yourself a bucket late in the game. But so much of coaching happens ahead of time. So much of that reputation by coaches is earned Tuesday, Wednesday, when you play on Thursday or Friday. So what can Hubert Davis win this week, today, tomorrow, right? Whether they're traveling and he's, you know, I'm sure in luxurious style, traveling with, iPads and laptops to watch all the film he could possibly think of, or even before they travel. First of all, if you need motivation from North Carolina or for North Carolina, which I don't think you do. They seem like a pretty internally motivated squad. But if you do, the sports books have UNC as a 4 or 5 point favorite, depending where you're looking. But ESPN's matchup predictor actually has them as the underdog, gives Alabama a 52.3% chance to win the game. I don't know, haters, right? Doubters, whatever puts a chip on your shoulder.
Those darn computers,
those numbers with algorithms and equations. So there you go, a little bit of motivation. Just, you don't have to use it, just saying. But I'll give you this. This is where UNC is in a situation that they have not been in all year. They played a lot of different basketball teams. They played different styles. They've played everything from UVA to a high-scoring team that wants to get up and down. But this is the first time all year that RJ Davis and UNC will face a team that has a player that averaged more per game points scored than RJ Davis. Mark Sears for Alabama averages 21.5 points per game. RJ Davis, the ACC player of the year, the All-American, right? The consensus first team all-conference player averages 0.2 less, 21.3. Sears shoots a few less threes per game, but shoots a higher percentage and gets to the free throw line a few more times a game. He's a legitimate perimeter scorer, 6'1", but can fill it up. Does Hubert Davis turn this into a Seth Trimble day? Seth Trimble off the bench is definitely on par with anyone else they have as a perimeter defender. Probably their best.
Yes, he's their best.
Do you turn to him and say, all right, Seth? And by the way, Seth has made some big plays. We saw maybe the highlight of the ACC tournament from an individual athleticism play, a dunk he had going down the middle of the lane. We've seen him block shots despite not being the tallest guy in the world.
I think he had, 3 against Michigan State?
He's a rim protector, is what he said after the game.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a Seth Trimble day, and that would be a little bit of a shakeup. He does play minutes, but if you gave him the personal challenge of stopping Sears or slowing him down, that would be a shakeup from what we've seen UNC do. But here's where I think, you know, Hubert really has to kind of dig into what he wants to do. Alabama's offense can go. It's not just Sears. They can flat out fill it up. It's their identity. Their defense, however, is the exact opposite. They let other teams go.
Yeah.
80-plus points allowed per game this season. North Carolina has to decide, right? Because I believe North Carolina has the perimeter players and the rebounders to – they can control the tempo a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying completely. You're not going to take Alabama and turn them into a 50-point-per-game team. But you can control the flow using RJ Davis, Armando Bacot, using Withers and Ingram as secondary rebounders. You have guys that can go in there and limit possessions, and then you can either run it up the floor or you can walk it up the floor. Right? You can either run your half-court offense looking for a great shot, or you could try to get in transition and secondary transition. Is UNC comfortable getting into a shootout with Alabama? Or will they resist that? Will they try to drag it into the mud and make Alabama uncomfortable, even if it makes UNC uncomfortable a little bit?
Yeah, their identity is to push the pace.
There's something to be said for it'll make us uncomfortable, but it'll make them more uncomfortable, right? Because UNC is a much better defensive team than Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
That could be the decision that decides the outcome, right? Because if you go into it saying we're going to beat Alabama at their own game, I mean, Alabama, you might do it because you have your own flamethrowers, you have your own big scores, you have your own ammunition to use, but at the same time, Alabama's not going to be uncomfortable in that. They're like, oh, cool, you want to get up and down? You want to run? You want to try to turn this into a score fest? Let's see who makes the most shots. Flip side, you could almost do exactly what Dennis was warning about in an earlier segment, which is you could outthink yourself and say, oh, we're gonna make Alabama so uncomfortable without realizing how uncomfortable it's going to make you too, right? It's like, oh, we're going to make Mark Sears so off his rhythm, and then you could make R.J. Davis off his rhythm. And you're like, oh, wait a second. That's not what I was intending here. So it's really about knowing your team, right? It's about knowing how good are they at playing the different styles. Because I'll give you this. The ACC, we talked about it yesterday, has really made all of us that are championing the ACC look pretty darn smart in the tournament thus far. Four teams make the round of 64, all four still alive in the Sweet 16. You look at the Big Ten, they had a whole bunch of teams in. Two made the Sweet 16. You look at the SEC, they had eight teams tied for the most to make the tournament. Two make the Sweet 16. One of the reasons I'm seeing described by analysts and experts is the ACC is the Goldilocks.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is the Big Ten, physical, right? They're like talent, finesse, punching you in the face.
No, thank you.
SEC is like talent, finesse. We want to score a bunch. We want to get up and down.
They can't play in the half court.
Physical? Uh-oh, we just got punched in the face.
Yeah.
The ACC is Goldilocks. They're like, cool, you want to speed it up? We got you. We played against the Wake Forests and the schools that want to go get up and down and score a bunch of points. Oh, you want to drag it down into the mud? We played against UVA, right? We've done it all to get here. So is that the advantage? Is UNC saying we're more comfortable being uncomfortable coming from where we came from? So let's turn this everyone's going to bet the over on UNC Alabama, where everybody thinks there's all these scorers, there's RJ Davis, there's Sears. They both average XYZ points, and let's turn it into a muddy game played in quicksand because the SEC doesn't like doing that, but we have to occasionally because we're going to play the teams in the ACC that want to do it that way. It's another option that Hubert Davis has to decide, and it's another way that a decision you make like Tuesday afternoon where you look to your assistants and say, hey, let's make sure they're ready for this type of game, could end up being the difference between winning and playing in the Elite Eight or going home and saying, why did we try to outscore Alabama? We're the better defensive team. That's why you get paid the big bucks, Hubert. That's why you get the cool shoes.
You might be able to balance it both because with their physicality on defense and their aggressiveness, especially when they're rebounding, you can actually force Alabama to play frantic because they're trying to push through all that, but you, in turn, can still play fast. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a difference between playing fast and playing frantic. There's a difference between the two.
You start getting into, like, the Mr. Miyagi sayings, be fast, don't hurry.
Well, yeah, there's a legit difference between the two. And I remember when I was coaching, I was instilling that same type thing, is that you can cause Alabama with you playing tough defense and getting transition buckets. They feel like we have to match every single possession, hence why they start playing frantic.
I mean, you tell me how to get anybody playing frantic, I'm going to say that's a good plan.
Yeah.
You get them frazzled, skittish, whatever the word is that you used to describe it, I'm gonna like your chances. Thank you for listening to the Best of the Drive podcast. I'm Tim Donnelly here with Coach Pete of Capital Financial Advisory Group. Coach, is it still true that $1 million is enough to retire on?
Tim, maybe and maybe not. The most important thing is to get a real plan that gives you income you never outlive. We'll give that away to the next 10 people. Call right now.
The number to call, 800-691-3215. Text Tim to 600-700 if you're interested in texting. Once again, that phone number is 800-691-3215 or text Tim to 600-700 for that deal. Now, let's look at Duke. John Shire, I think, is in a really interesting position, because if there's one thing we know about John Shire as the head coach, right? There's a lot we know about him as a player and did a whole bunch of stuff at Duke, but national champion, huh? But as a coach, we know he can recruit his tail off, right? First overall recruiting class, second overall recruiting class, and then the one coming in next year is expected to be the first overall headline by Cooper Flagg. It's the schematic stuff. It's the in-game coaching. It's the game-to-game adjustments that I think the fans are still waiting to see more from him, and it's where he can continue to develop, right? There's only so many places you can go from the number one overall recruiting class, right? And there's a little bit more to be desired when it comes to the schematics of it. Well, guess what? You're in the Sweet 16, and you're going to be playing chess with Kelvin Sampson. It's a good opportunity to prove your doubters wrong. Kelvin Sampson, the head coach of Houston, he's had, ironically, if you separate recruiting and coaching, he's had his brushes of controversy and recruiting violations, but he has had success in the tourney, right? So it's maybe a little flipped, right? He has had a ton of success in the past 4 years at Houston since he's gotten it cranking with the Cougars, right? Since he got the since he got the program where he wants it to be, he has really been able to keep it up, and he's built off of each year, and he has an appearance in the Final Four, and he has a bunch of Sweet 16s, and he's proven that part of it. That's not to say it's paint by numbers. If I'm Duke, I'm looking at Houston and going, what the heck am I looking at? I almost today I caught myself for like 20 minutes just trying to explain what Houston is. They are an unusual team. They are point blank the best defensive team in the country. Okay? And I think we all are kind of aware of that. If you watch college basketball, right? Even if you're watching a game and there's like, tomorrow Houston's playing, they're a great defense. Like, it's just part of their identity, right? They're in the ins and outs as they promote the game for the next day. It's the best defensive team in the country. Houston takes on whoever they're taking on the next day. But I didn't realize how good they were, and I didn't realize how unusual their roster is constructed. They are the first team in the statistical rankings in fewest points allowed. That makes sense. They are the number one in the statistical rankings and fewest field goal attempts allowed. So it's like, all right, they're scoring less, but they're actually holding them to not taking many shots. But then they're also lowest in field goal percentage allowed. That almost doesn't make any sense, right? You're either a really good defensive team because you keep the other team from shooting a bunch of shots, or you have them shoot a very low percentage on the shots they do take. They do both. They are number one in the country in both. Needless to say, they've allowed the fewest made field goals per game this year. Which, right there, that can twist your mind up into a pretzel enough, but everything I learned about this team, it got weirder.
Did you know that your unused medications could end up in the wrong hands? It's important to keep your medication secure in a locked location, such as a locking box or locking cabinet. When it's time to dispose of them, safely and properly dispose of old, expired, or unused meds by using an at-home disposal product or a medication disposal box in your community. Don't miss out on medication take-back events happening near you. Don't let anyone take what's yours. Lock your meds. Be aware. Don't share. Learn more at lockyourmeds.org/NC.
On average, people spend over a third of their life sleeping, yet most sleep disorders go undiagnosed.
I'm Megan Gigling, General Manager of Parkway Sleep Health Centers. Sleep struggles left untreated can lead to health problems and have a serious effect on your quality of life. We've served the Triangle for 20 years. Let us help you get the sleep you've been dreaming of.
If you're in need of a sleep study, a knowledgeable doctor, CPAP machine, or supplies, Parkway has you covered. For more information or to schedule an appointment, visit parkwaysleep.com. Sound sleep. Sound health.
They have no one on their roster even listed above 6'8".
And usually they inflate those numbers.
Especially, like, if you have a 7-footer, you're like, all right, we got our 7-footer, put him down there. Mm-hmm. If your tallest guy is 6'6", you go, all right, somebody's got to be 6'8". And you just write down 6'8".
Right. Shoes on.
Yeah, exactly.
Put a hat on.
Do we have any hair gel? How high can we get that flat top? Their highest listed player is 6'8". So they are modern basketball to the fullest, right? positionless basketball, right? If you don't have anyone over 6'8", who's your center, right? Who's your five man? Who's guarding the other team's five man? Well, it's got to be that guy. You can't out-hustle or switch everything on screens to make yourself 5 inches taller. Somehow they've been doing it, but, like, you can't teach speed. You can't teach height. There's a few things you can't teach. So I look at it and say, this is the decision John Shire has to make. And I think the earlier he does it in the week, the more he can prepare the individual. I think there is a neon sign, like driving down the strip in Las Vegas on the side of a building with an arrow pointed to this game, and it's just blinking, bzz, 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 saying this has to be a Filipowski game. This has to be the Filipowski game. You know how, like, Kelly Olynyk will hit 7 threes in a game and then everyone calls it the Kelly Olynyk game? Mike Miller hit 6 threes in an NBA Finals game. One of them, he lost his shoe for the Heat, and it became the Mike Miller game. This has to be the Kyle Filipowski game. John Shire and his coaching staff have to use their entire basketball brains, go back to every game they played in, coached in, studied on film, and use whatever motions, whatever plays, whatever movements they can to get Filipowski in position to play bully ball. They've got a guy who is 7'1", 7'2", against a team that has no one close. And oh, by the way, they're really good at foundational team defense. So you're going to have to just beat them mano y mano, right? You're just going to have to be better, right? It's the football thing where they have really good cover guys. They just have a secondary who's... they're just really good team. They're not going to be out of position. Guess what you have to do? Look to your number one wide receiver and say, make a play for me.
Yeah, jump ball. Get it.
Go beat your guy, right? Get him turned around. I'll throw it to you. But we need our number one to be a number one right now. Duke needs their 7-foot-plus number one to be a number one right now. Jared McCain will give you the spacing, right? Jeremy Roach will give you the spacing. If his finger's okay. All of that will be there. You have shooters. This has to be a Filipowski game. So once you have the game plan, once you have everything kind of set up, right, once we kind of have everything where you know it's going to happen, then it becomes the other side of coaching, right? The one side is the X's and O's. The one side is the savant stuff, right? The coach in a dark room with the film going with the projector screen, and you're looking for the one edge your team can have. That's one side. The other is management of personalities, right? Coaches, they're scouts, they're schemers, they're psychiatrists, they're peer mediators, they're friends, they're a little bit of everything. Then John Shire has to bring out his best motivational stuff to make Filipowski ready to play bully ball when he is in a position to do it. Right? Hype him up like he's going to go fight Mike Tyson in his prime, where he has to know the only way he has a chance is if he knocks him out. And also prepare him to, you're probably going to eat a couple punches. Right? John Shire has to bring out, and I say this, not in a like play dirty way. He has to bring out the meanest version of Kyle Filipowski that we've seen at Duke. The version of Kyle Filipowski who says, I don't care if they foul me, I'm going to dunk it anyway. There is a moment, and I'm not comparing him to these individuals. Let's just get ahead of this. But when you are a physically imposing presence, there has to be the switch that flips that says the refs aren't going to give me cheap ticky-tack calls. So I might as well make the bucket anyway. Shaq had that moment. LeBron had that moment where it's like, I'm just bigger than everyone else on the floor here. So if they bounce off of me, I'm not going to get the foul call. So I might as well dunk it anyway. And then you have to get somebody who we haven't seen do that, right? He's a perimeter guy. He has finesse. He has skill. And say, take that Throw it out today. I don't want to see any finger rolls. I might make that a rule. Hey, Flip. See this guy right here? This is Sean Stewart. He sits next to me on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you finger roll it, you're going to flip spots. Even if it's just for a possession, if you finger roll it, you're coming out. I want dunks. I want strong layups. I want you to be like an eighth grader that just learned he could tap backboard, because you do that on every layup once the first time you learn you can do it. Once you learn you can tap backboard every layup, you're like, backboard, pop. Even if you're just getting the little rubber pad on the bottom you're doing it every single time. The Drive with Tim Donnelly, 99.9 The Fan.
Could be a big Mark Mitchell game, too.
Could be a Mark Mitchell game.
Yeah.
Could be a Sean Stewart game.
Never know.
What I mean by that is those guys, like Houston has athleticism, mm-hmm. but Sean Stewart, Mark Mitchell have athleticism and size. Mark Mitchell had one of the cooler new profile pictures of the round of 32. He didn't have a great game, but he had one play where he was like Statue of Liberty dunking it, ball way above his head, and you know, he looked like, ready for this? The Olympics are coming up, right? They're pretty soon. Once every 4 years, I watch water polo. And do you know what is the craziest thing to watch water polo guys do?
What?
They get like their entire torso above the water.
Yeah.
And they just hover there with their, like, I guess their legs are doing it. It's absurd. He looked like that, except instead of the water line, that was like everybody's heads. His entire torso was just above everybody else in the game, and he was getting ready to dunk it. If Mark Mitchell can do that, maybe he can be the bully ball. And we know Sean Stewart is a twitchy, springy athlete. He just doesn't play as often. So maybe if Filipowski, they obey my rule, and he has a couple finger rolls, Sean Stewart will get a chance to get in there. Or foul trouble or an injury or any of those things.